Welcome back to an all-new episode of Dirtcast. I am your co-host, Madeline Davies.
I am your other co-host, Megan Reynolds.
And today's episode is a longtime dream of mine finally coming into fruition. We're doing a special on CBS's very short-lived reality show, Kid Nation, which is about a bunch of kids trying to form a society without adults and all of the ethical and moral implications that lie within. Joining us are two cast members from the show, Mike Kling and Michael Tote. Mike right away is thrown into like a leadership role, which they did not prepare him for in any way. And so he gets a lot of flack pretty quickly. And then Michael was sort of like the golden boy of the show in that he was very smart and thoughtful and alternative, and people just were really big fans. But before we get into that interview, which is meaty and exciting and funny.
Full of laughter.
Full of laughter.
Lots of laughter.
A tear brought to my eye.
Also same.
A happy tear, which is rare for me
a
these days.
A happy and then a wistful tear for me personally.
I would like to ask my friend Megan.
Mm.
What's up, girl?
Nothing much. This episode will be airing on my birthday.
Everybody say happy birthday to Megan.
I'm taking the rest of the week off to indulge in being a birthday princess. I don't even know what that means. It means literally just not working. Which is the best gift you can give yourself, I think.
I think that is the best gift you can give yourself.
How are you? You were somewhere fun recently.
Yeah, I was in New Orleans with former Jezebel deputy editor, Dodi Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much fun. I'd never been before.
Ugh, it's the best city.
I feel like I ate a bajillion things,
yes,
and all of them tasted incredible.
Mm.
The servings there are crazy.
Quite
so
large.
Just like, I had the praline bacon
so
there.
So good.
Literally called pig candy.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Also, like, it just feels like a different country.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that you can just, like, get fucked up on the street
weird
is wild. One night, we went to the Cat's Meow, which is a very touristy mm-hmm but beloved karaoke bar that's, like, on Bourbon Street.
Mm-hmm.
And we walk in, and one of the people I was with just goes, "Is that Kirsten Dunst?" And it was.
Oh, my God.
And then, so that was, like, already kind of crazy.
Right.
And then suddenly, Beth Ditto gets on stage.
It's fucking insane.
And just, like, sings the most incredible version of Fancy by Reba McEntire.
That is bonkers.
Yeah, it was wild. And then in this moment, Kirsten Dunst came up to us and offered us a Jell-O shot.
Again, also insane.
My friend is like, "You shouldn't just like take drinks from somebody."
It's
and
Kirsten
I was like,
Dunst.
I was like, what? If I get roofied by Kirsten Dunst,
like all right.
Not to make light of it, but like,
come on,
I'll figure it out later. But yeah, it was like she had a bunch of extra, and so she just like went around the bar offering them to people.
What an angel! What a town!
What a town!
It's a great place.
But yeah, I'm currently like off alcohol and
sure,
a lot of things. I'm just like, I gotta take a break.
Every time I go there, I'm always like, I really want a salad. I just need a fucking leaf.
And it's like impossible to find greens. At one point, I was like sending him pictures, and my boyfriend was like, "Hey, do you think we should just like move to New Orleans?"
We should.
And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, yeah, but like only if you want to die early but happy.
True. I mean, it's my ultimate, it's my final destination.
Yeah.
It's New Orleans.
Sounds great.
It's where I want to
like
live.
Sounds like a good plan.
Forever. Thank you. It's my 5-year plan. Let's get the fuck out of this rat hole. Just kidding. Or
I mean, an interesting fact about New Orleans is that all of the burials are above ground.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really get that dirty. Megan.
Maddie.
Yes? Are you ready to pivot to the dirtiest dirt of the
I have
week?
Never been more ready in my fucking life.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So Saturday Night Live made its illustrious return.
Yay!
Yay! Adam Driver was the host, that big-bodied man.
I love him. I can't help it.
Big slab of man was the host.
He's a giant.
He's a giant man. Kanye West was the musical performer, which...
I am going to not give him the attention that he wants.
Yeah, moving on. As we all know, Pete Davidson is on Saturday Night Live, and he has had a very busy summer publicly making out and running from the paparazzi with his fiancée, Ariana Grande. Naturally, they address this during Weekend Update, my least favorite segment.
Jost.
They like trotted.
It's because you like Colin Jost too much,
right? It's because
you're
my
like,
love.
Don't limit it to these.
Yeah.
This 5 minute.
Yeah. My
segment.
Love and sexual attraction to Colin Jost is such that I need more. That's not true.
Good.
Yeah. Disgusting. So, yeah, they trotted Pete out to make some like gentle jokes about his relationship with Ariana Grande. He made a couple of jokes about how the power dynamic in their relationship is off because she's the breadwinner and he is just like whatever.
Also, like, how does that mean the power dynamic is off? You know,
or like, yeah. He made a joke.
Some weird sexism that's built into our culture.
That's true. Thank you, Maddie. He made some gross jokes about how he replaces her birth control with Tic Tacs.
Yeah, last night I switched her birth control with Tic Tacs. No, I believe in us and all. But, you know, I just want to, like, make sure that she can't go anywhere.
Didn't, like, Ian Somerhalder make some weird joke about, like, replacing Nikki Reed's birth control pills?
Yes.
Those jokes are always, like, so...
These jokes are so terrible.
I mean, I always assume that, like, they have cleared the joke
with
their partners before,
yeah.
And they're like, no, it's funny. But I just am always like, ugh.
I would murder. They're still together. The bet is still on. I actually forget the terms, the limit, like, the... what our bet was.
Oh, it was a year that they make it a year.
They make it a year.
No, it wasn't that. It was that they get married.
Just that they get married.
And it's $5 in a pack of gum.
That's right. Thank you for keeping.
I would like to lose the bet. Will I?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Thank you for keeping me accountable. Here's another item about love. Justin Bieber and Hailey Baldwin did get married after all. When they went to the courthouse to like, they were photographed outside a courthouse.
I thought we knew that.
I think they had said, like, we got married, but, like, we were going to have, like, a God ceremony or whatever.
Right.
And then now I think they're like, never mind. We just got married, but there's no prenup.
All right. Get yours, Hailey.
All right. Yes. Okay. Timothy Chalamet and Lily Rose Depp are dating, I guess.
Yeah. I saw that report, too.
Yeah.
Here's my thing, though.
Okay.
Just because two early 20-somethings make out
at a mud coffee
does not mean that they are like
dating.
I mean, if they are, they're a very pretty couple.
True.
A very like delicately featured couple.
Just like a very sort of fine, like.
Yeah. Very like a very like pixie like couple.
Yeah. A very clear and pure of skin kind of situation.
But I feel like Timothée is really like the type to like get after it.
Oh, 100. Oh, yes.
And I don't even mean that in a bad way.
Just like.
I just mean like you're young.
He's living his life.
But.
He's young and hot.
But again, I think these are two young and hot people. And like, why not?
Just be young and hot
why
together.
Why not like rub your mouths, you know?
I agree. Well, they were spotted, as I said, at a mud coffee truck in New York. And that definitely means they're in love, getting married, and dating.
Yes, it's true love forever.
Yep. Congratulations. Here's another love that involves Timothy that I feel like is more pure in a different way. Armie Hammer, who is his co-star in Call Me By Your Name, wrote a weird sort of love letter to him in Variety. They released an issue that features like different celebrities writing love letters to other celebrities. And this quote I just wanted to highlight because just the thought of Armie Hammer writing this is hysterical to me. I was given the gift of witnessing his meteoric rise firsthand, much of it happening over the short span of our press tour for Call Me By Your Name. It felt like his metamorphosis from a young, quirky, and beautiful boy, pardon the pun, to a savvy, self-possessed, and in-demand leading man happened before all of our eyes. But I still don't know if it was Timmy who was reborn or if it was a matter of us coming to realize exactly who he is and what he is capable of.
I think that's very nice.
It's sweet. It's just a lot. What I like the most about this is that he was called Timmy.
But that's like what all of his friends know him as.
Is it?
Yeah, because that's how like Ansel Elgort refers to him, and they're like old pals. It's like, oh yeah, Timmy. Right. It's nice to read someone saying something nice.
It's nice when people are nice. Something that I think like once a month, and this is the time. This is I will rescind my blackened cynicism, and
you know what? You do what makes it. You feel the best.
Thank you. I will try.
It's filling your heart with hate.
Sometimes you know. Sometimes that works really well.
It is true.
These next two items are stupid. Like arguably very stupid.
We do have a very good entree point.
With
Timothée.
His
buddy, Ansel Elgort, is going to be Tony in the Steven Spielberg adaptation of West Side Story. I was having a big think about this morning.
Tell me. I saw it just as I left the house and, like, did not have time to process it.
So West Side Story is one of my favorite movies.
Okay.
So my first reaction was, like, just, it's perfect, leave it alone.
Right.
And then I thought about it for a second, and I was like, it's actually far from perfect, and it's, like, a pretty problematic movie.
That's true.
A lot of brown face happening in it.
Totally.
And then I was like, Tony is, like, kind of like a saccharine dope.
Also true.
Also, like, he's Polish.
True.
And that I, like, think that maybe, like, this is not bad casting.
Twist.
I know. I'm surprising myself more than anybody.
I mean, my goodness.
But I'm just like, one, it's like we'll still always have the original.
That's true.
In all of its issues will remain.
True.
But like depending on how they like do the soundtrack, like I think if they like overproduce it, it'll be horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, maybe there's something that could kind of work.
Does Ansel know how to sing?
Yeah. He went to LAG, man.
Thanks.
He went to LaGuardia, which is a performing arts high school.
Produces a lot of stars.
And it's also portrayed in Fame. But yeah, he like does, he like did musicals growing up. It's like another Ansel and Timmy anecdote is that Ansel would get all of the parts in the musicals.
Okay. Admittedly, I know very little about Ansel Elgort except that Jezebel's Departed, Ellie Sheckett, he is her sworn enemy.
I think it's partially because she's secretly horny for him.
Sure. You know what? And many of our sworn enemies are people that we are indeed secretly horny for.
It's true.
Life and love work in mysterious ways.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I'm less upset than I expected myself to be.
We'll see.
All I'm saying is that Ansel as Tony is not horrible casting.
Okay.
They cast Christian Bale in a musical, and he's the worst singer and dancer ever. So,
oh God,
and that's a cult classic.
Okay.
Talking about Newsies, folks.
She is. It is a cult classic. Okay. Judgment on the shelf for the moment.
Once like a trailer or stills come out, I may completely rearrange.
I can't wait. I can't wait to continue to further this conversation. This last item is the headline. And then what actually happened are hilarious to me in different ways. So this was on People this morning. Jamila Jamil reveals she developed seizures after trying to eat a cookie off the floor.
Damn.
And my
something I've done so many times.
My initial thought was like, oh my God, what kind of floor did she drop the cookie on? Like, what horrible, like, superbug was on the cookie that gave her a seizure? Like, why is this the first time we're hearing about this? Holy shit, et cetera. Then I clicked on it because I must know. And it, what they omitted is that the reason she got the concussion is because she dropped a cookie on the floor and was like, I'm going to eat that cookie, bent down to pick up the cookie, hit her head on the corner of like a table and gave herself a concussion, which is unfortunate.
And if people don't know who she is, she's Tahani on The Good Place.
She's Tahani on The Good Place, a fun little television program that is back.
She's a really interesting person.
She is.
I was listening to another podcast. Sorry.
Wow.
I was listening to Nicole Byer's podcast, which is called Why Won't You Date Me? And she was the guest. And she just, like, talked a lot about her childhood and growing up. And, like, she got signed to be a model at 15 and, like, developed a horrific eating disorder.
Yeah.
And then was hit by a car.
Oh, my God.
And broke her back. But she, like, credits that with, like, saving her life in a way and that it's, like, made her have to, like, reframe her entire diet.
She runs an Instagram account that's called, like, The Good Body Project or something. It sounds weird to be, like, it's an anti-body shaming Instagram account, but I think that's its purpose. She's tweeted an awful lot about Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, kind of more as, like, a concept than the woman. You know, it's like kind of about this really famous family that's so rich and they're like still selling
The appetite suppressing lollipops is, I believe, what made her pop off.
Yeah. I don't know. If you got a moment, I would listen to that podcast just because it's very intriguing.
Huh. I didn't know that. And I love to learn, and I will.
So in our upcoming interview, we have two very special guests, Mike Kling and also Michael Toate, who are two cast members from the CBS show Kid Nation, which ran in 2007 for one lone season. And it was sort of a Lord of the Flies-esque experiment where 40 kids were dropped in a supposed ghost town in New Mexico and expected to form a functioning society.
This is Bonanza City, New Mexico, or what's left of it anyway. The pioneers who ran this place back in the 1800s ran it into the ground. Lack of leadership and lack of will combined to leave this town completely and totally dead. But that's about to change. Now, 40 new pioneers will try to fix their forefathers' mistakes and build a town that works. It won't be easy. Pioneer living is tough. And the amazing part is, these pioneers are children. That's right, the oldest just turned 15. The youngest is 8 and a half. They are every kind of kid imaginable. City kids, country kids, rich, poor, and everything in between. And they're on their way here right now.
Joining us today, we have two of the kids of said nation who are now men. We have Mike Kling and Michael Toate.
Hello.
Welcome, guys. We're so excited to have you here and to, like, bring you together again, but under, like, less rustic circumstances.
Less stressful circumstances also, one hopes. Wow.
Yeah, it's all of the above. All of the above.
Right. Let's start off just like one at a time. Like, Mike, if you want to go first, can you tell us how you ended up on the show and what the casting process was like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was involved in actually a theater very near to where I'm living right now, where I'm sitting right now, called Village Theater here in Issaquah, Washington. And I was doing just like youth theater there. And I guess they got a phone call one day. And they said, can you recommend 40 names that we can, you know, get on phone interviews and check out for this show? And that kind of led to an hour-long, hour plus probably, like, phone interview process. And then going down to, like, the local CBS affiliate and doing camera testing stuff and doing a lot of on-camera interviews like that. And then going down to Los Angeles, and it was all very wild and fancy, and I didn't know anything about Hollywood or anything like that, so it was pretty crazy. And they like interview just lots and lots of interviews with more progressively more important people until they called me and said, "You're in."
They're like, "Do you own a cowboy hat?" Two.
Yeah, they were like, "Hey, if you own a cowboy hat, bring them. Those are encouraged for all contestants." And I was like, "Oh, that's great, because I just got this great cowboy hat on vacation." So,
you wore that hat.
I wore that hat. Oh, man.
And Michael, was it sort of the same process for you?
Yeah, it's funny hearing it from somebody else's perspective, because I think the story always sounds so weird when I tell it. But then, like, kind of hearing Mike go over it, it's like roughly exactly the same, where they just kind of bombed in on an organization I was involved in and knocked on their door. Basically, here in Washington, I was playing in a music program in the summer. And I think essentially the way they do it, kind of like how Mike implied, is they look for organizations that kind of have maybe like some of the archetypes they're looking for.
Yeah, totally.
And right. So I think they were definitely looking to fill their like long-haired Seattle quota. And so they were kind of like, they were knocking on doors of like music programs and stuff like that. And I was one of the names they had put forward. And like, sure enough, pretty much exactly as Mike said, it's like this really weird, steady, but long escalation that eventually, you know, they kind of tell you, well, we're flying you down to LA and like real auditions are beginning. But it all started with talking in at the local CBS affiliate, doing some like phone interviews. I think I had to fill out like a huge packet of questions too.
Oh, huge questionnaire. Yeah.
Which like, I don't remember the specifics of it. I remember it was like a huge pain in the ass now, but,
oh yeah.
What did your parents think of this whole thing? Did they take convincing or were you just like super excited for it? So they're like, yeah, all right. It's basically summer camp, but on TV.
My mom is definitely kind of a stage mom of sorts. So, you know, she was all over it.
Yeah.
as soon as she got the call, you know, she's like, it's like our director and stuff. And she's a friend. And it's like, okay, this doesn't sound sketchy. It actually sounds really exciting, like CBS primetime. So my mom was all over it. She was like, I'm flying down to LA with you. Like, she's like, I'm going to invite every single person we've ever met to come watch all the, you know, to come watch all the episodes when it airs. And she was absolutely stoked.
How about you, Michael?
TV wasn't like a big part of our family or anything. So they weren't like necessarily enthused about it. They weren't opposed either. I think they were just more or less like bemused by it. Yeah, because like
still very, very Seattle.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Because like, what do you say if you're not super into reality TV, you don't know too much about it, and then one day they're like, hey, we think your 14-year-old has like the personality that we want to isolate in the New Mexico desert.
You bring up personality, and I feel like both of you filled really particular roles in that, you know, Mike, you were sort of like the, I don't know, dare I say, sort of nerdy, yeah, like, rule keeper. Yeah.
It's okay. You can lay into me.
No, I mean that from, like, a sweet, like, I don't know. I think it's, like,
I took running the town very seriously.
Which yeah, is exactly.
Very,
which is great.
Very seriously.
No, I mean, and you, like, really threw yourself into town council, and I think history will remember you as the bold leader that you were trying to be.
I guess this is such a silly feather to put in my cap, but, you know, the first episode is titled, I'm Trying to Be a Leader Here, which, of course, was me.
You know, I'm tired, too, but I'm here making an effort to try and make this work. I'm trying to be a leader here, and it's just really disappointing.
We all want to go to sleep. Yeah, we do.
you know, it's so funny because I didn't choose to be on the town council from the get-go. I just wanted to be on the show. And then they kind of called me back and were like, oh, and by the way, you're going to be having kind of a special part from the get-go here. There's like a bunch of unaired stuff where they went to town council members' like houses and like saw us off and stuff. And it didn't really make it into the show. And then
right. They're like, we only want to see these kids in pain. Like, oh, that's all we want is to see them under duress.
I like how they set you guys up for success, too, by like
putting us in a helicopter and immediately,
they had 36 of us. 36 of us there. And like, we can count and figure out there's like four missing. And they're like, I don't remember exactly how it happened now, but there's the whole tease thing they do in reality TV where it's like, and your leaders are arriving right now.
But don't worry, you've got each other. You've also got four leaders. And they were chosen because they represent all of you in age, geography, everything. They're your town council. And I think I hear them coming right now.
And it's you guys like literally soar in on like a helicopter.
Yeah.
Well, we've been on like this a dusty fucking bus ride for like an hour.
Yeah, that was, and for us it's like, you know, there we definitely had our reservations too, where they put us in the helicopter and we're like, this is the coolest thing ever. And then we kind of, as soon as we get off of it and start talking to the other 36 kids, we realized that like, oh man, these guys have just been on this bus for like God, 6 hours, 8 hours on a school bus. And I can see now. I can see what they did to us. Okay.
It's such a it's such a bummer because you were like so stoked with your hat and your you're like ready to lead.
Oh, I'm feeling like really stressed and really worried. It's just been really tough. I guess I'm just gonna have to keep pushing.
Yeah.
Get dropped off in a helicopter and they just like swat you down real quick.
Everybody was like, okay, these assholes.
It's funny because they're like, oh, let's let kids start a society because they're like have all this naivety and innocence. But let's also make sure that the leaders show up like in aristocratic like carriage of some sort.
Yeah, let's immediately institute some social division there.
I was rewatching the first episode prior to this interview, and there's like, I love at the beginning where they're like, kids from all over the United States, some are rich, some are poor. And then it just like zooms in on one kid who just like probably just like, I'm fine. Like, what are you talking about?
Come on, man. Yeah, it was definitely very, they definitely try to do that kind of thing. I was thinking about what you said earlier, Michael, about like how they would try and reach in and grab certain archetypes when they were casting the show. And I remember like you could definitely see like the groups of kids like Greg and kind of Emily and Randy and all those guys from Nevada. There was like a pretty big group of kids from Reno area. And it was things like, they got me from the theater. They got Greg from the rodeo, you know?
I'm not, like, trying to project. I mean, obviously, like, reality TV is, like, really manipulated. But, like, the scene where, like, you stand up to Greg is, like, really brave.
Greg, since he's all big and strong and older, he would try and break me down. That's sure what it felt like. He was trying to break me down hard. Made me really mad. He pushed me to like my limit.
I don't know. Like, I feel like I never would have done that. How old were you? 11?
This is a wonderful three-act play, or whatever, with or three-man play with me and Greg and Michael in that scene. It was really intense. Actually, that was not any like scripted or anything. That was just I had a big mouth, and I just as soon as he tried to big time me, I was like, well, that's not going to happen. I'm just going to have to ride this one out. And it was kind of scary.
I get worked up just thinking about it now.
Oh, man.
It sounds hilarious, but, like, I definitely was, like, keyed up for that situation, too, because it was, like, the first day we were there. And I remember going into that I was super nervous just about, like, being on TV and everything in general. And I was more than anything, I was nervous, like, what if somebody is being a real dick and I just totally wuss out on, like, TV and I just don't do jack shit about it. And I just, like, oh, then, so I think in that moment, I, like, was having a lot of different feelings because it was like, oh, my God, it's day one and this guy is a total asshole. This one guy is trying to be nice. Yeah, it was pretty wild.
It's like it was a monster adrenaline rush. And Michael, like, you know, much to your credit, it must have been in a crazy moment trying to actually speak up right there.
Yeah. I, looking back, I kind of surprised I did it, I guess.
You're like, and I never did it again.
Yeah, exactly. And ever since then, I've just been a hermit.
So, like, in these situations where, like, literal children are about to get into a physical fight, what are the adults on set doing?
Filming intently.
Yeah. flocking. There were 12 different camera crews, and they, like, covered a lot of ground. It was a pretty big set. But if something like that, if people started yelling at each other, they would come running and they wouldn't do anything. I don't remember really ever them intervening, but maybe I also blocked that part out, Michael. Maybe you remember. There's only a couple of times that I can think of specifically, and a lot of them were off camera actually, that they had to keep kids from beating the crap out of each other.
Right, right. Kind of, yeah. And I guess it's kind of just by almost definition that those those moments were off camera, because
yeah,
they can't just put them on. But I feel like all the craziest stuff always happened while I wasn't really around. I was always doing something else, and then like heard through the grapevine, or would have a producer run up to me and be like, Michael, maybe something's happening in the kitchen and you'd like to go check it out. And be like, I guess I'm going to the kitchen now.
I love like the suggestion. Like it's like a suggestion with like a gun to your back. Like, yeah, maybe like you would be interested in, you know, going and seeing what's happening there.
Like, it's not like everything is scripted or anything, but there's definitely like the little nudging like that. It's just funny how they try to like preserve the illusion that it's some sort of organic moment when they're like, I don't know, maybe you want to go fight with somebody because it's real boring around here.
No, yeah. I remember like there being some, like the starts of the incidents would be organic where it's like, oh my gosh, like Greg took it upon himself to go wake somebody up by like dumping 2 gallons of water on their head. It was like, oh, that's actually, somebody's really mad right now and they're not faking it and that is not scripted. But then the producers are like, you know what would make this moment better? Is if we made sure that every kid in the town that we could find, you know, like, ran to the scene. Like, we better round them up.
Let's take, like, a tween who already is, like, easily embarrassed.
Stressed.
And then, like, make them even more embarrassed and, like, under pressure.
Let's see how
to see how they react.
Let's see how this 11-year-old reacts to their debut on national television while being bullied.
Well, that's also funny in that, like, I don't know, the maturity level between 8 and 15 is like pretty huge, you know, like, and it's very funny to mix like actual like babies.
Yeah.
I don't know, in this situation.
Yeah, no, it's it was definitely being 11 years old. I felt very grown up at the time. And then by the time I was 15, looking back, watching the show, I'm 23 now. And like by the time I was 15, going back to watch the show, I was like, oh my God, I was a baby. I felt like I had more in common with the 9-year-olds than I did with the 15-year-olds.
Right.
At that time.
And you're like getting bullied by a 15-year-old and they're just like, well, you know, this is life.
Yeah,
this is life in Bonanza.
Yeah. And when they put you in charge and you're 11 and you know that you're going to be in charge of kids up to the age of 15, you're like, well, they're just going to have to respect my authority because I'm the leader and them's the rules. And then, of course, day two, you've got Greg, you know, pushing off on your chin and you're like, how do I do this? Yeah. And then when you're 15, you're looking back on it like, oh my God, if I rolled into town and they told me that this punk ass 11-year-old is going to be like telling me what to do.
Dweeb.
Yeah, this like awful Boy Scout theater dweeb who is way, way too loud. Yeah, no, that's like not going to happen, you know? It was weird. Like the perspective came later.
Yeah. I remember like when they first circled us all up, like around the host, Jonathan. I just remember like looking at all of this and just feeling like, man, this is going to be a long ass 40 days. Just because how bizarre it is, the lack of...
40 days is a long time.
It's a long time when I think I was the fourth or third oldest person there. And it just became clear pretty soon that it's not like I had real responsibility, but at the same time, I was going to have to, like, you know, do more than the 8-year-old for sure.
Well, and didn't you say in your Reddit AMA that you did a few years ago that, like, the production staff would, like, sneak you iPods?
Yeah, they would. There were a couple of them that would let me, like, borrow their iPods and stuff like that.
That must have just been, like, such a nice, like, release just from all of this chaos.
Totally nice for you. I didn't get any of that. I didn't get any iPods. We got plenty of food,
though.
See,
that's the disadvantage of being 11 years old at the time.
Yeah, you can't talk to him as easy. Yeah. See? Yeah.
See, this is my version of, like, manipulating both of you to fight. It's like, I'm going to bring this up and then just walk away.
Well, I remember the craft truck, especially when they, like, you know, because they try and maintain the illusion, but you've got,
you know, you're getting in a truck and getting driven to what you can tell, even as an 11-year-old, you can tell plainly is a movie set to sit you up in your interview for your confessional. And the craft truck at, we called it B-Town, where all those were filmed. And it was like, you know, it was like legendary. It was like, oh, like if you're going to B-Town, like, oh, dude, you got to try and grab whatever you can out of that craft truck. That was like gold. Those snacks were absolutely like lifesavers.
The show would have been so much better if it were about kids being on a reality TV show.
Right.
if they would have abstracted like one more layer, it would have been great.
If it had just been a little just, like, more sort of, meta.
Yeah, like about us like trying to steal snacks and everything.
Oh, dude.
It's like so Dickensian. Just like these little orphans just trying to steal food from the film crew.
Oh, that was actually now that you bring it up, I'm remembering actually probably one of the best on-aired moments from the show could possibly have been when we got raided. And this one very mean producer was behind our like red team's boys' cabin getting raided, and they found a bunch of those craft truck snacks in our trunks and like hidden under our pillows and stuff like that. And it was a sad day, but it was wild. We pressed on. Yeah, I don't know, but that one producer from Philadelphia, that dude was a monumental jackass.
Right.
So were there limits or rules as to what you guys could or could not do during the course of taping?
I can't think of any real specific guidelines we were given. You know, looking back, I'm pretty impressed by actually, like, I mean, there were definitely moments where shit got a little crazy, but for the most part, most people, like, comported themselves pretty well on the show. And I can't think of too many instances where they really had to, like speak one-on-one with somebody and like really give them some like prescriptive, like, you need to do this, you need to not do that. But I mean, I guess I could think of instances where they probably tried to limit people's interactions if they could, just if they could tell, like, oh, this is, you know, this is a conflict that probably is crossing over into territory where it's inappropriate to broadcast an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old talking this way. But outside of that, I can't think of too much. I do remember a producer told Sophia and I at one point, they were like, all your scenes today are going to have bleeps in them. So think about,
well, you guys were like the cool art kids. So makes sense.
Yeah. These guys,
yeah.
I remember, to me,
I was like, great. Now I'm cool.
Yeah. I remember being 11 and, the concept of swearing actually was introduced to me on Kid Nation, more or less. I was aware of curse words, but I had never really explored their use for myself.
That was the fault of the older children.
Yeah, and it definitely that definitely was something where it was like you had to be careful because they would not necessarily like avoid all of the curse words. Like they might air a few bleeps. And it was like, oh, man, what if my mom sees this? Because I was 11, and I didn't think, oh, my mom would probably just find it hilarious.
Or like, he's in a stressful situation. He can have a couple.
Exactly. Like,
a
couple bleeps. Like, she'd probably love it. I'm trying to think. I'm still trying to rack my brain for, like, really things that we could not do specifically, because, like, that was pretty open. Like, kids would, like, kind of walk out into the – there's a couple instances where you see it on the show that kids would just walk out into the desert every once in a while, just to see if there was anything to do out there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well, most notably on this show is one point where the irrepressible Colton goes out and meets some of the cattle that are on the ranch, because this is a half movie ranch, half, like, real working cattle ranch. And it's actually probably one of the most exciting moments on the whole show is he stares down a very, very large animal, like a bull or a cow, like, and he is staring this thing down, and he jumps at it and scares it off. But it looks like it is about to run him over. It is so scary. And it kind of reminded me, like, you know, they kind of really let us kind of do whatever the heck we wanted. They just mostly just wanted to limit like things that we talk about on camera.
Like things where you're like calling attention to production, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big one. And honestly, I remember it was weirdly kind of taboo to talk about home.
Yeah. Like,
oh, that's interesting. Not surprising, but interesting.
Yeah, they really wanted us to steer us away from like, you know, well, what was home like? Like, what do you do back there and stuff? Like, well, who do you hang out with at home? Like, whatever that was for you. Like, they really wanted it to be like, I think they just wanted us to be thinking clean slate. Like, it doesn't matter what home is like. We're all citizens of Bonanza City now. So, like, you don't, like, it's really not great TV to just watch all these kids sitting around talking about how much they miss their friends.
How much were you allowed to talk to your parents?
Like, almost pretty much not at all. They were pretty good at limiting that.
What?
I did not. We did not get to talk directly to our parents.
You got to drop, like, written notes back and forth, like, kind of like in prison, the way they like.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Definitely.
Yeah, they made it a part of the prize. You know, at the end of every episode, you get the gold star, and you also get a phone call to your parents. Right.
The thing that I always thought was the funniest was, that's the time they let you talk to your parents. Like, well,
you literally got a gold trophy.
It's like, well, Jimmy, your parents do love you, but you should, if you would have carried that extra bucket of water, they would have been able to tell you.
Oh God.
But the gold star thing, looking back, is just so strange to me.
Extremely fucked up.
I like the idea of it giving us prize money, though, rather than like the alternative, which I guess would have been voting us off, which might have been it. I don't know. Like, it's a very weird thing to think about. Like, what if Kid Nation, but they vote somebody off the island at the end of every episode?
Right.
Yeah, I feel like that would have been really cruel.
Really messed up, right?
I mean, you guys were already going through so much. It seemed...
Well, it cracks me up that at the end of that show, they made me distribute, with the three other council members, but like $150,000 with like no preparation. Like, hey, teenagers, you've got this. Like, now redistribute the wealth.
Yeah, and it was like, don't worry. We got all the oldest kids on the town council now. So, you know, they'll be good.
Yeah, and they kept telling us, they're like, remember, you can give it to yourselves. And it's like, okay, like, devil on the shoulder type thing.
Remember, you could give it all to yourselves.
Yeah, remember.
And you deserve it.
When you're trying to retire, you can look back and remember when you could have brazenly grabbed all the money and ran from the other children.
We've been talking a lot about, like, production manipulation. Mm. And it's making me think of the episode where there's the garbage overflow. Which was sort of very manufactured, right? They, like, brought in the garbage.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but, like, there wasn't a ton of waste. And then one day they literally, like, actually trucked in waste because there wasn't enough.
I'm having a very hazy memory of that.
Yeah.
They definitely had to, it was definitely like some set dressing at least of like the trash and stuff. Like I don't want to get it twisted because anytime you saw a giant stack of dishes on the show, that was very real. Like some of that filth was 100% real, but I want to say that the garbage episode, they definitely at least dressed the set with apparent trash.
It's just funny because it shows like it's such a busted premise, unfortunately, about like having kids run it, because clearly they had like the garbage thing planned ahead of time. And then things were just going too well. And rather than being like, guess what? They avoided this problem. It was like, now we got to like introduce some bullshit.
Yeah. Right. Like, these children have formed a somewhat functioning society. Like, boring. How can we fuck this up?
Yeah, exactly.
Clearly, they had to write some kind of plan. They have to have, you know, some new challenge for us to overcome every day besides, like, the actual challenges, which were also pretty freaking insane looking back at it.
Arbitrary physical strife.
Oh, my God. Well, I had forgotten to mention earlier that a big factor of my parents liking the show is the fact that my mom is a huge Survivor and Amazing Race fan. And so I was like, it's like I'm on Survivor. So I grew up being a Survivor fan. And those challenges were exactly like the thing I was most excited about. I was like, oh, my God. We are going to, it's going to be just like Survivor, like with the challenges and the stuff. And then the next thing you know, I am like taking bubblegum out of my teammate's mouth and putting it in my mouth to finish chewing it so that we can do a bubblegum paint by numbers. And it was hell. It was terrifying.
Oh, God.
So how was life after you guys were both done with the show?
Yeah, I'm also wondering, like, do you guys get recognized ever from this thing that you did, like this weird experiment you did 11 years ago?
I never do because my hair is so much shorter now. And that's that was a pretty big distinguishing factor for me. There was actually a window of time where I wasn't allowed to cut my hair because I had to, like, keep it. I don't know. They wanted me recognizable for a window of time, so that was a really strange phase.
Yeah, we had to do some publicity stuff in, like, the subsequent year after we filmed, like, the show.
No major physical alterations, which for me was I had to keep the shag. But but post Kid Nation has been, like, pretty cool because now it just has regressed to this, like, cool anecdote I have that doesn't really – it only has as much bearing on my life now as really I let it because I have to, like, bring it up because nobody's really going to – mention it. But then there are situations where, like, last year I was working at, like, just a small little bar in Seattle, and there was a regular who I was, like, super good friends with after a while, and I think we had been, like, talking for, like, 6 months or something like that, and then he out of the blue mentioned that he, like, wrote a paper about this absurd reality show.
Whoa.
Yeah. When he was in college. So now every now and then I get these, like, great scenarios where abruptly somebody at a party will be like, has anybody ever heard of this really, like, messed up show? And that's the absolute best when somebody brings that up.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, I have had similar things where, like, at least, yeah, right after it happened, I got recognized occasionally. You know, like I said, we got to do some publicity stuff. And that was very different. It was like, wow, like, I'm getting flown down to Hollywood and stuff. And the coolest thing that I ever got to do was be on Ellen.
I forgot you got Sophia, to be on Ellen.
Me and That's Sophia amazing. Got to be, yeah, Sophia and I got to be on the Ellen show. And
I'm super jealous.
That's
of
awesome.
That.
It was Congratulations. Completely surreal. I cannot tell you. Like, that was way cooler than the actual show.
people should interview you about that, right?
Oh my gosh, that was amazing. She's wonderful. One of the other cool things that happened to me was a producer named Gen. He felt very bad that I didn't win a gold star. He, like, personally thought, was, like, had been rooting for me. Or at least that's what he said.
Aww.
That's what he told
me. That's cool.
And I was like, well, that's really cool. I appreciate that. And he was like, listen, I want to make it up to you, and I have the power. So I wanted to know if you and your mom and your brother wanted to come down and sit with me at the Survivor live finale.
Oh, my God.
Oh, so my cool. God.
That's nice.
And since then, it's just every once in a while at a party, somebody's like, wait a second. Are you Mike from Kid Nation? I loved that show. And it usually goes from there. And that's, like, you know, that happens every couple of months or when you meet new people. And that's pretty much all I get anymore from it.
Well, I mean, and it's funny because, like, pardon me, but I, like, scoped your Instagram and, like, you like look very different and very much like blossomed into like a very handsome young man. It's funny to me that people would be like, oh, are you that like little shrimp? You know, like.
Well, yeah, that was funny because like I remember when I was probably 14 and I stopped wearing glasses for a portion of my teenage life. And I kind of got taller and hit puberty and that kind of thing. And people stopped recognizing me. And I went from like being that guy, like that recognizable guy. Everybody remembers him from Kid Nation to, you know, the cowboy hat and the glasses. And it was just like, oh, okay. Like now I get to be, it's like for me at the time, it was very relieving. It was like, whew, like, thank
yeah,
gosh.
Oh, I got you. I'm someone different now.
Stuff.
Also, for the record, I did not mean to sexually harass you. I just was trying to compliment you.
No, it's okay.
I'm way too old for you, so it's don't worry.
No, don't it's you guys true. Sweat it. It was okay.
Would either one of you ever go on another reality TV show if offered the opportunity?
Yeah, totally.
I would be on Survivor in a heartbeat.
Why not?
Heartbeat.
I feel like Kid Nation, if anything, has made me realize that I can bounce in and out like a ghost or a phantom. And
that's right.
One day in, the next day out, and nobody hears from me again. but in all honesty, it's for as crazy as it was and like as wild of an idea and as hairy of a situation as it is being in like a really weird reality TV show when you're 14, a lot of that stuff, like the wake of it, is what you make out of it. And I feel like if you go crazy and, you know, nowadays, like, parade yourself around social media and try to, like, pick fights with other reality TV show stars, like,
that seems
like hell. But everybody's attention is so willy-nilly these days that you could hop on and hop off and people will forget within a month.
Instance.
Yeah.
Well, and also we're getting to the point where, like, in 10 years, like, every single one of us will have been on a reality TV show.
I was just about to say the same thing, where, like, I have a coworker that was on a reality TV show now. And it's, like, pretty soon these people are just going to be everywhere, where it's, like, what weird show were you on?
I have this dream.
Okay.
And that is Survivor.
Survivor Kid Nation. Yeah, everybody wants it, Mike.
But here's the thing about Survivor. It would be way better if it was also Kid Nation, Where Are They Now?
That would be fucking incredible.
Like, let's get 16 of us off of Kid Nation. Like, you know, just cherry pick them, you know, me, Michael, Sophia, a couple other ones that, like, got a lot of, you know, whatever, like, made a strong impression, whoever you want to cast, and we do Survivor.
If the disgraced Les Moonves is listening to this...
We can bring him back.
Our loyal listener, Les Moonves.
Yeah.
That would be an incredible program I think would do really well.
CBS needs to pivot away. They need a new story rather than their creepy-ass old boss. So
I feel like we should be wrapping this up fairly soon. But I just want to ask, and this is a pretty obvious question, but you're both still in touch with Taylor, right?
No, not really.
Nope.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, boy.
A small joke.
I love to just, like, rag on someone who's 10, you know?
Whose only memory is you have of her as being 10.
Yeah, she's a 10-year-old.
It's like, I always love seeing, like, whenever there's an internet comment, it's like people don't realize that, you know, when you really rag on an 11-year-old and tear into them, it also reflects pretty poorly on you sometimes.
It does. It's true.
Okay, Michael, I don't need your judgment.
No, you know what?
We're on the show, right, is to rag on our 11-year-old selves.
Yes,
I mean, to be fair, also, you could pivot to the other side and say, like, also maybe don't give people so much to rag on because there's, like, there was a wealth of material there for sure.
That's a lot.
No, this is, I mean, I am the one who deserves judgment, no doubt about it. I also, like, haven't forgotten this reality show for 11 years because it made such an impression on me, so.
Quite resonant.
Is there anything that you guys want to add? I would hate to, like, silence the voices of two Michaels. I don't know.
Let me just say that even if we were exploited... which, looking back, I'm pretty sure we were to some point.
Sure.
Yeah, like, it's definitely not something that I regret. It was definitely my memories are hazy, but overwhelmingly pretty positive, honestly. And sometimes it sucked, but it was really, really fascinating all the time. So I'm glad we did it.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess to piggyback off that, the thing that I would say is that I do think the executive producer who, at least to my knowledge, kind of brainstormed and led the charge on most of the things, Tom Foreman. I think he did have a pretty... I do think he really wanted to make something that was optimistic and kind of forward-thinking and not overly exploitative. I don't think that was ever his intent, intent at all. And, you know, especially like over the past week, in just the past couple of years, I do think there's like, there's kind of a touching idea at the heart of Kid Nation, which is just that, you know, there's an aspect to younger people that is sometimes refreshing. I think you saw it in like the Parkland children most recently. They're not really children. They're absolutely adults in how they conduct themselves. And
yeah, you know, more than a lot of people.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so when you look at this past week and you think about, you know, the spoiled assholes who may or may not become Supreme Court justices and throw tantrums in the middle of the floor, you can remember that, like, you know, there's a point in time where, like, there's some 11-year-olds out in a New Mexico desert that managed to handle themselves a little bit better under scrutiny as well. And I think that's important to remember.
We're both, like, weeping.
Yeah, we're both, like, clutching our hearts.
This is what he does, man. This is how he does it. You see,
that was really nice.
Thank you.
Still doing
it. It's been such a long fucking week.
And we're, like, a little closer in age, so I feel much more comfortable.
Well, you have my contact.
This has to end now.
Mike and Michael, you were both absolute delights.
A dream.
I'm really excited that you guys were willing to talk to us, because this, I think, is... been such a good discussion. Michael, I'll call you later.
Okay. All right. That's
it. Thanks so much. Hey, I promised my girlfriend Courtney I'd say this. Fuck Donald Trump, and we don't like him. So I had to get that on, put that one down to the record.
Right.
So thank you.
Okay,
for letting me do
Mike,
that.
You're winning me back.
Oh my god.
And then throw out there for my girlfriend Tika, it was all in jest. It was never a real thing that was going on here.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Okay. Guess what, guys? I have a boyfriend, too.
All right.
So you're not the only one.
Okay, that's good.
No, thanks I'm sorry, Tika. This has been really, really fun. You know, we said it was great, those heady days when we were kids and getting asked to do stuff for Kid Nation. But this is like, this blew my mind, like, that somebody still wants to talk to me about Kid Nation. So thank you very much.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you so much for listening to Dirtcast, and thank you very much to Mike Kling and Michael Tote. This episode was produced by Rachel Withers and was mixed by Jamie Colazzo. Maja Nemofidi is our executive director of audio. Our theme music is by Stuart Wood. If you want to send us a tip or just let us know what you think, hit us up at dirtcast@jezebel.com. You can find us on Spotify, NPR One, and anywhere else you get your podcasts, and please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.